Welcome to another deep dive. Today we're tackling a topic that I think can be a little bit tricky to talk about.
Yeah.
Sexism.
It's a big one.
It is a big one. And, you know, sometimes I feel like we get so caught up in the opinions and the anecdotes about sexism that we forget to look at what the research actually says.
Right.
Like, what does the data tell us about sexism and how it operates?
Well, you're in luck, because today we're going to be doing a deep dive into the work of one researcher who has done extensive work on this topic.
Oh, cool.
Dr. Maite Gary-Gordabil, a psychology professor at the University of the Basque Country.
Oh, wow.
Oh. From 2008 to 2013, she actually conducted six different studies.
Six studies on sexism.
Okay, so we're not just talking about like a quick survey or something.
This is in depth.
This is like serious research.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do these six studies cover? Like, what kind of ground are we talking about here?
Well, she looked at everything from how common different types of sexism are in the Basque Country,
to these surprising connections between sexism and like psychological and social factors.
Wait, all the different types of sexism. I always thought it was just like, you know, sexism.
Yeah, a lot of people think that, yeah. But Dr. Gary-Gordabil's work shows that it's a lot more nuanced than that.
Okay.
She breaks it down into four main categories.
Okay.
Hostile sexism, benevolent sexism, ambivalent sexism, and neo-sexism.
All right, I am officially intrigued. Break it down for me. Like, what are the differences between all these types of sexism?
Okay, let's start with hostile sexism.
Okay.
So this is the most, like, obvious and aggressive form.
Okay.
It's, you know, those openly negative attitudes and beliefs about women.
Yeah.
You know, seeing them as, like, inferior, incompetent, manipulative.
Right.
Like, you know, women are bad drivers, you know, those.
All the classics.
Women are too emotional to be leaders, that kind of stuff.
Okay, so that one's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
What about benevolent sexism?
Okay.
That sounds almost nice.
Yeah, it does, right?
Yeah.
That's what makes it so tricky.
Right.
Benevolent sexism is more subtle. It often, like, disguises itself as this positive regard for women.
Right.
But it still reinforces those traditional gender roles and limits women's opportunities.
I see. So it's like that kind of, you know, women should be cherished and protected kind of thing.
Exactly.
But it's actually implying that they're weaker.
Yeah.
And need to be taken care of by men.
Exactly. And it's the kind of sexism that can, like, fly under the radar. Because
yeah.
It's like, oh, they have good intentions.
Right, right.
But it's still sexism.
Okay, so we've got hostile sexism, which is openly negative. Benevolent sexism, which is, like, kind of tricky.
Subtle.
Subtle, yeah. What about ambivalent sexism? Is that just a mix of the two?
Pretty much, yeah. Ambivalent sexism basically acknowledges that people can hold, like, both hostile and benevolent sexist views at the same time.
Okay.
So someone might believe that women should be, like, protected and adored.
Right.
But also think that they're less capable than men in certain areas.
Mm, got it. Okay. That makes sense. And then the last one you mentioned was neo-sexism. Is that just, like, new sexism?
Not quite. Neo-sexism is more modern.
Okay.
And it's a subtle form of sexism that often denies that there's still discrimination against women.
Oh, wow.
So people with, like, neo-sexist views might say things like, feminism is no longer necessary, or women have achieved equality, so, like, why are they still complaining?
Yeah, that's sneaky. It's like sexism trying to, like, hide in plain sight.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we've got all these categories of sexism.
Right.
That Dr. Gary-Gordabil is working with. So what did she actually do with them?
Well, one of her first goals was to get a clear picture of, like, sexism in the Basque Country.
Okay.
She wanted to understand how common these different types were and, like, if they were more prevalent in certain groups.
So she wasn't just, like, theorizing about sexism.
Yeah.
She was actually going out and measuring it.
Yeah, she was measuring it.
That's really cool. How did she do that?
Well, she developed these, like, standardized questionnaires and scales to measure the different types of sexism.
Okay.
And she didn't just ask people if they were sexist.
Right, because nobody's going to say that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So she used, like, cleverly designed questions to reveal people's underlying attitudes and beliefs.
Clever. So she went out and, like, surveyed people in the Basque Country.
Mm.
Who did she talk to?
She surveyed a really diverse group of people across all three provinces of the Basque Country.
Oh, wow.
Representing different ages, genders, okay, education levels, socioeconomic backgrounds.
Okay, so she was really trying to get, like, a comprehensive picture.
Yeah, as comprehensive as possible.
Of what sexism looked like.
Yeah.
Did she find any, like, patterns in the data?
She did.
Oh, okay.
And this is where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
For example, She found that men consistently scored higher on measures of hostile sexism across all age groups.
Okay, so not totally surprising.
Not surprising.
But did she find anything that, like, surprised her or that challenged maybe some common assumptions about sexism?
Definitely.
Okay.
So while men scored higher on hostile sexism,
it was different when it came to benevolent sexism.
Okay.
In younger age groups, men scored higher.
Okay.
But as people got older, the scores evened out.
Interesting. So maybe those benevolent attitudes become less acceptable as people age?
Yeah.
Or maybe they just like morph into something more subtle?
Yeah, maybe. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something to think about.
And it's interesting, too, because you mentioned education levels.
Right.
Like, the more educated someone was,
yes,
the less sexist they tended to be.
Right. The lower their scores on those sexism measures tended to be.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Yeah.
The more you learn about the world and the different cultures.
Right.
The less likely you are to, like, cling to these rigid stereotypes.
Exactly.
So we're starting to see how this research goes beyond just, like, identifying different types of sexism.
Yeah.
She's uncovering factors that contribute to it.
Exactly. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh.
She didn't stop at just mapping like the sexism landscape. She wanted to understand the connections between sexism and this whole range of other factors.
So, like, what kind of connections are we talking about?
We'll dive into those more deeply in the next part of our deep dive.
Mike, don't tease me a little bit.
Okay, just to give you a taste. Dr. Gary Gordabil's research explored these fascinating links between sexism and empathy, anger, eating disorders, even the ability to understand and express emotions.
Oh, hold on. Sexism and empathy.
Yeah.
What?
It's a thing.
That's a connection. How do you even study that?
Well, that's what we'll uncover next time.
Okay, so last time we were talking about all these like different connections that Dr. Gary Gordabil's research found about sexism.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned a link between sexism and empathy.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to learn more about that.
Yeah, it is a fascinating connection.
It is.
You know, you might intuitively think that people who hold sexist views are less empathetic.
Right.
But Dr. Gary Gordabil wanted to like test that scientifically.
Okay, so how do you study something as complex as empathy?
Right.
I mean, can you even measure empathy?
Well, that's the beauty of research.
Okay.
She used this well-established tool called the Interpersonal Reactivity Index.
Okay.
And it measures different aspects of empathy.
Okay.
Like the ability to take someone else's perspective,
right,
understand their emotions, and feel concern for them.
So she had a way to measure empathy.
Yeah.
But how did she connect that to sexism?
Well, she used her standardized scales to measure different types of sexism.
Okay.
And then she analyzed the data to see if there was a relationship between people's empathy scores and their sexism scores.
Got it. And what'd she find?
Well, she found a significant negative correlation between sexism and empathy.
Okay.
Essentially, as empathy scores went up, sexism scores went down.
Okay. So the more empathetic you are, the less likely you are to hold sexist views.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right.
It's just powerful to see it, like, confirmed by research.
Yeah.
Did she find that pattern for, like, all types of sexism, or?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
It was particularly strong for hostile sexism and neo-sexism.
Okay.
Those more, like, blatant forms of prejudice.
Right.
The link with benevolent sexism was a bit weaker.
Interesting.
Which suggests that those subtler, you know, seemingly positive forms of sexism might be less directly tied to a lack of empathy.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we think about like solutions to sexism, we often focus on things like education, policy changes.
Yeah.
But this research suggests that like cultivating empathy could be a really powerful tool for actually changing people's attitudes.
Absolutely.
Like changing hearts and minds.
Yeah, it highlights the importance of like fostering empathy in individuals and in society as a whole.
Okay, so empathy and sexism are connected.
Yes.
What about that link between sexism and anger you mentioned earlier?
Oh, yeah, that's another area where Dr. Gary Gordabil's research challenged some assumptions.
What do you mean?
Well, you might think that people with sexist views are just like generally angrier people.
Okay, yeah.
But her research showed that wasn't really the case.
Oh.
Men on average scored higher on measures of sexism.
Right.
But there wasn't a significant difference between men and women when it came to overall feelings of anger.
So it's not that sexist people are angrier.
No.
It's about how that anger is like.
Yeah, maybe how it's directed or expressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So did the research reveal any like patterns? in how sexism related to anger?
It did.
Okay.
There were these positive correlations between sexism and like outward expressions of anger,
okay,
as well as difficulty controlling anger.
So people with sexist views might be more likely to like lash out,
yeah,
or have trouble managing their anger,
especially in situations that challenge their beliefs about gender roles.
Hmm. So maybe sexism doesn't always manifest as like overt rage.
Right.
But it could show up in like,
yeah,
how people handle conflict, especially with women who don't conform to traditional expectations.
Right.
Okay, this is pretty intense.
Yeah.
What about that connection between sexism and eating disorders?
Okay, yeah.
How do those even relate?
Well, it might seem like a strange connection.
Yeah, it does.
But think about the intense pressure,
yeah,
women face to conform to certain beauty standards.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the media is constantly bombarding women with messages about, you know, being thin,
yeah,
perfect skin, looking eternally youthful. It's
a lot.
Yeah.
And Dr. Gera Gordabiel's research suggests that sexist attitudes can actually contribute to that pressure.
Yeah.
You know, think about it. If you believe that a woman's worth is primarily tied to her appearance,
right,
you're more likely to endorse those unrealistic beauty standards.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But did her research actually find a link between sexist attitudes and eating disorders?
It did.
Yeah.
While men generally scored higher on measures of sexism,
right,
women reported experiencing more eating disorder symptoms.
Which is not surprising, given,
yeah,
all the pressure we were just talking about.
Exactly.
But what was interesting,
yeah,
is that certain types of sexism, particularly hostile and benevolent sexism,
mm-hmm,
were correlated with things like body dissatisfaction,
mm,
a drive for thinness,
yeah,
bulimia.
Exactly.
That's really disturbing.
It is.
But it also makes sense. You know,
yeah,
if you see women as like objects to be admired for their beauty,
right,
you're more likely to contribute to that pressure that they feel,
yeah,
to conform to those standards.
And it highlights how sexism can have these harmful consequences that,
yeah,
go beyond just making people feel uncomfortable or discriminated against.
Right.
It can impact their mental and physical health as,
yeah,
well.
Okay, my mind is officially blown.
Yeah.
Sexism is linked to empathy, anger,
mm-hmm,
even eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to see how deeply ingrained these attitudes can be.
Right.
And how they connect to so many different aspects of our lives.
It's really intertwined with a lot of things.
It is. Did Dr. Gera Gordabiel's research explore any other connections?
She did.
Okay.
She also looked at the relationship between sexism and something called alexithymia.
Alexi what now?
Alexithymia,
okay,
is a psychological term,
okay,
that describes the inability to understand and express emotions.
Okay.
So imagine having difficulty putting your feelings into words.
Okay.
Or even just recognizing what you're feeling.
Wow, that sounds really challenging.
Yeah.
But what does that have to do with sexism?
That's what Dr. Gera Gordabiel wanted to find out.
Okay.
And her research did reveal some interesting patterns.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat. Tell me.
Okay, well, she found that men consistently scored higher on measures of both sexism and alexithymia.
Okay.
And just like with sexism,
uh-huh,
alexithymia scores tended to increase with age.
So are you saying that men just become more sexist and emotionally clueless as they get older?
Well, it's not quite that simple.
Okay.
Remember, correlation doesn't equal causation.
Right.
We can't say for sure that one causes the other. Okay.
However, there were significant positive correlations.
Okay.
Between sexism and alexithymia.
Why?
Suggesting that people who struggle to understand and express emotions,
right,
might also be more likely to hold sexist attitudes.
Okay, so there's a connection.
Yeah.
But we need more research,
yeah,
to really understand like the why and the how.
Exactly.
Okay, this is all fascinating, but I'm also starting to wonder, you know,
yeah,
if sexism is so deeply intertwined with like,
mm-hmm,
our emotions,
mm-hmm, yeah,
our upbringing,
yeah,
even our culture.
Right.
How can we possibly change it?
That's the million-dollar question.
It is.
And thankfully, Dr. Gera Gordabiel didn't just stop at like identifying the problems.
Oh, good.
Her research offers some insights into potential solutions as well.
Well, that's a relief. I was starting to feel a little overwhelmed by,
yeah,
all this.
Yeah.
So what did she find? Like, where do we even begin to tackle something as complex as sexism?
Well, that's what we'll be exploring in the final part of our deep dive.
But I can tell you it involves looking beyond just like individual attitudes.
Okay.
And considering things like family dynamics.
Right.
School environments.
Oh.
And even broader cultural influences.
Okay, I'm ready for round three. Bring on the solutions. All right, so we've spent the last two parts of this deep dive
Yeah.
talking about Dr. Gary Yarglobil's research on sexism.
Yeah, a lot of information.
A lot of information. And honestly, it's been a little bit heavy.
It can be.
Yeah, but I'm really hoping that we can end on like a more hopeful note.
Yeah.
What can we actually do with all this knowledge?
I'm glad you asked that because
Yeah.
while her research reveals some, unsettling truths about sexism,
All right.
it also points towards some promising avenues for change.
Okay, good.
One key takeaway is the power of education.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
We talked about how people with higher levels of education tended to score lower on those sexism measures.
Exactly.
So knowledge is power when it comes to fighting sexism.
I think so. But
Yeah.
it's not just about formal education, We need to think more broadly about things like public awareness campaigns,
Yeah.
workshops, media literacy programs, anything that can help people understand the nuances of sexism and challenge those gender stereotypes they've internalized.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when we talk about sexism,
Yeah.
we often focus on like individual attitudes and behaviors.
Right.
But your point about like media representation makes me realize how much our culture shapes those attitudes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Think about how often women are portrayed in these like stereotypical roles
Oh, yeah.
in movies, TV shows, advertising.
All the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And those images can really reinforce those harmful gender norms
Right.
and make it harder for people to recognize and challenge sexism in their own lives.
So we need to be more critical of the media we consume
Yeah.
and advocate for like more diverse and realistic representations of women.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's media. What about parents?
Yes.
You know, we've talked about how family dynamics can influence sexist attitudes.
Right.
What can parents do to raise children who will like challenge those stereotypes?
That's such an important question.
It is.
And Dr. Gary Gordabiel's research on parenting styles offers some valuable insights.
Okay.
Remember how we discussed those different approaches to parenting?
I think so.
Authoritarian, authoritative, permissive, and neglectful.
Yes, and if I'm remembering correctly, the research suggested that an authoritative parenting style,
Yes.
so one that's warm and supportive but also sets clear boundaries,
Right.
was associated with lower levels of sexism in children.
Precisely.
Okay.
It seems that finding that balance between providing guidance and fostering independence can
Yeah.
create an environment where kids feel empowered to question those gender norms
Right.
and develop their own values.
So it's not about being like overly strict or
No.
completely hands off.
Right.
It's about finding that middle ground.
Yeah, that sweet spot where
Yeah.
kids feel safe
Right.
to explore and
And
challenge.
it's also about modeling those egalitarian values
Yes.
in your own life.
Absolutely.
Right.
Kids learn so much from observing their parents.
Oh, yeah.
If they see you dividing household chores equally,
Yeah.
encouraging them to pursue their passions regardless of gender,
Yeah.
challenging sexist language and stereotypes when you encounter it, you're sending a powerful message about equality.
I love that it's about walking the walk, not
Yeah.
just talking the talk.
Exactly.
But let's be real, parenting is tough.
It is.
Even the most well-intentioned parents make mistakes.
Oh, for sure.
Are there any other like strategies that parents can use to combat sexism?
Absolutely.
Okay.
One simple but powerful strategy is to expose children to diverse role
Oh,
models.
okay.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
So read them books with strong female characters.
Okay.
Show them movies and documentaries that celebrate women's achievements.
Right.
Introduce them to people from all walks of life who challenge those gender stereotypes.
I love that. It's about expanding their horizons and showing them that the world is full of possibilities. You
Exactly.
know, we've talked a lot about individual responsibility,
Right.
but it seems like we also need like broader societal changes to really move the needle on this issue.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Dr. Gary Gordabiel's research really underscores the need for these systemic solutions,
Okay.
like policies that promote gender equality in the workplace,
Right.
comprehensive sex education that challenges those harmful stereotypes,
Yeah.
and legal frameworks that protect individuals from gender-based violence and discrimination.
So it's like a multi-pronged approach,
Yeah.
education, individual action,
Yeah.
systemic change.
It's a lot.
It's a big challenge,
It is.
but it feels less overwhelming when we break it down into those concrete steps.
I think that's a key takeaway from this whole deep dive.
Yeah.
Understanding the complex nature of sexism can feel daunting.
Yeah, it can be.
But it's also empowering.
Oh,
once we see the problem clearly, we can start to envision solutions and take action.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's a message of hope.
Yes.
Not despair.
Exactly.
So for our listeners who are feeling inspired to make a difference, what are some concrete actions they can take?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Start by having conversations with your friends and family about the things we've discussed.
Okay.
Challenge sexist language and stereotypes when you encounter them.
Mm-hmm.
Support organizations that are working to promote gender equality.
Yeah.
And most importantly, be a role model for others.
Us.
By living your values and advocating for a more just and equitable world.
Well said.
Thank you.
It's a reminder that even small actions can have a ripple effect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as we wrap up this deep dive,
I
want to leave our listeners with one final thought.
Good.
Change is possible.
Yes.
It might not happen overnight.
Right.
But every step we take towards greater understanding and action brings us closer to a world where sexism is a relic of the past.
Thank you for joining us on this journey of discovery into the fascinating and complex world of sexism research.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you've learned something new, challenged some assumptions, and most importantly, felt inspired to be part of the solution.